Affairs Subcommittee. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of this meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Okay, quorum call.
Jack?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Ed Chairperson?
Here. Item 4, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call.
Bonnet?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Yes, I have proof of publication of this meeting. Item 6, review and recommendation on NARD 414H Retirement Plan Restatement. General Manager John Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attached in your book are the resolutions and participation agreements to restate the NARD 414H and 457 plans. This is not due to any legislation or changes that have been made to the design of the plan. It's simply an update to modernize the platform that is utilized. So this is required by all districts to approve the changes as outlined in your information. So I would recommend approval. And be happy to answer any questions.
Move the staff recommendation.
Okay. Can I get a second?
Second.
Any public comment? Staff? Directors? Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Item 7, we adjourn at 4:02.
I want to call to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting for July 12th. We've just read the Open Meetings Act. I'll read it again. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, revised statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I'd like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you very much. Quorum call.
Yes, or here.
Yeah.
Here.
Sapinski?
Here.
Chairperson?
Aye, here. Number 4, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. We have proof of publication of the meeting notice that will become part of the permanent record. Item number 6, review and recommendation of revisions to groundwater rules and regulations, Appendix N, Paul Woodard.
All right. Good evening. Just a quick overview of what we're doing. There was, of course, you'll have some policy revisions later on tonight. This is kind of associated with those. There is, in part of the policy, and there's a groundwater management programs in there as well. But this appendix is specifically our rules and regulations as they relate to how we're going to administer requirements in our groundwater, like our, in this case, our groundwater management areas as they're related to our hydrologically connected areas. So what we had back in 2018 was a requirement that we have a 5-year period where we require flow meters to be put on all high-capacity wells. That would be most irrigation wells, which is most of them, but other industrial wells as well, by 2023. Well, as time went on, we were getting pretty close to being able to go out and let everybody know this was a requirement and get them going on cost share. Then the 2019 flood hit. It wasn't really a responsible time to tell the landowners about this. requirement. And then we also decided to put in for a water sustainability fund, which we were able to receive. So now we've got funding. We just need a little bit more time to enact this and install all of these. I've actually been really surprised without a lot of we will need to go out and let every landowner know for sure that this is going on as well. But just by word of mouth right now, we've already done 44 flow meters this year. That's with the new cost share. So things are going along pretty well. I would think an extension to 2025 would give us the time we need to utilize the grant and get everybody on board here. I guess the reason what flow meters do, what we're finding out in other parts of the state is to run the models and determine how much water is being used. Right now it's pretty much a kind of a guesstimate. We take the type of crop being grown, the amount of precipitation available that year, and then if it's irrigated, we assume that the property owner put on just the right amount to bring the crop up to speed or what it would have used, you know, had it had that much precipitation available. Well, there's places where people put on more and there's people where places put on less, and that's really what a flow meter is there to tell you, is what is the real amount people are actually putting on for these different applications and different uses. Can't manage what we don't measure. It's not intended, I don't think, based on our current groundwater management plan, that at any time these meters would be used to like regulate how much water is being used or any of that. Right now it's really an educational endeavor. So with that, that's the background on it. You might scroll down real quick to the map. So this only affects the area in blue on the southern end of our map here, which may be subject to little change as we go into the future. That's part of the discussion about modeling and stuff tonight, but that this hydrologically connected area may change. But right now, that's the area we're proposing to require to have flow meters in. And there's approximately probably 250 irrigation wells in that area. So that'd be it. I'd entertain any questions? Yeah, Director Japp.
So is the goal to get every one of those 250 with a flow meter, or just a certain percentage of them in?
The goal is to get every one, and I, you know, currently the situation is that because everybody is, you know, because it's a cost share program and every landowner is putting in some money, it wasn't really something where you say, hey, you need to do it and you need to do it, but you don't and you don't. So I think that's the philosophy we came into this with anyway.
Have there been a lot of new wells put in the last few years?
No, we do track that. 1 to 2 wells at most every year. We pretty much have a first come first serve policy for who's doing new irrigated acres, and most of the time those have required a new well. Sometimes it's a person putting on an additional pivot length or something like something they already have going on, but yeah, there's not a high demand, and there's probably actually, if we look real close, there's probably also some. You know, let's say they put a sand pit development in where there was a pivot and irrigation well. Well, now they're not going to be using that for irrigation anymore. So sometimes there's some leaving the system as well.
And has there ever been, when we monitor the groundwater in that area between the rivers, has there ever been a decrease in the amount of water, a significant decrease because they're irrigating, or does it just never seem to make any difference?
I don't think we know because of irrigation or municipal use or how much is being pulled out during like the middle of the summer, because it's kind of an active type situation. But for the most part, whenever the river rebounds, spring and fall, whenever we get those readings, the groundwater is back up to approximately where it should be. Now, it could drop. I guess what we found, it usually drops or changes a foot and a half or more up and down between those fall and between those different readings. It may be more during the middle of the summer. Those drawdowns might be more. But Okay. Because they're connected to the river, they basically bounce right back.
So it drops a foot and a half. Do you have any idea how deep it is, actually? A foot and a half out of what?
Well, you know, again, they're kind of next to the river. They're kind of in this mound between the two rivers going between each one. So in terms of the river, a foot and a half is a fair amount of water. But they're approximately 75 to, well, even 90 to 75 feet deep.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
All the money we got from the Water Sustainability Fund, is that going to cover 250 wells at $1,500 max?
Yep.
So, and the goal is to get all of them, but in reality, you may only get 200, and the money goes back. We just don't spend it. Come the end of 2025.
Right, could potentially be like that.
It's word's going to spread, I guess, is the way it's probably going to have to work out.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Rick. Mr. Chairman. This is sort of an unrelated question, but and it may be a dumb question. But around Mead, where they have the chemical corn piles, is any water or any creeks or anything flowing into the Platte that may get into our district at all?
Generally, the creeks and the groundwater. Do you have a laser? Here's my thing. So,
I don't see a thing.
There we go. Okay.
Oh, there we go.
So, there's generally a high area between there, or right kind of next to the river there. It's kind of slow. But the High Plain or the Todd Valley system is another groundwater thing that comes down and ties in about right here. So, it's kind of all separate. Basically, groundwater and surface water from the Mead area are going to head that way first. Now, could they ever affect the Platte River? I mean, models show that it would take a very, very, very long time. But okay. It's affecting groundwater locally, just not near the Platte right now.
Okay.
Thanks. We can move staff recommendation.
I move the staff recommendation as well.
Get a second.
Second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to move you along.
Can we get?
Yes. I'll make a motion to move a staff recommendation.
And Larry, I think, second it. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item?
Larry's not in
the room. You committee yet?
County Ted or.
I can second it.
Or nobody.
Well, you can appoint me to the committee.
Yeah.
Or not Ted.
Ted's going to do it?
Yes.
Okay. No one from the public wishes to speak to that. Roll call.
But you're the oldest.
Yes.
No.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Jefferson.
Aye. Item number 7, review and recommendation of Water Sustainability Fund grant application for the Lower Platte NRD AEM groundwater modeling. Paul Woodard.
Good evening again. So, where we're at with this one is we've completed a previous project as part of a Water Sustainability Fund grant where we took all of the AEM helicopter data, were able to convert that into files that would become available to put into a groundwater model. So we've got the geology really well defined now, at least better than they have a current model for our entire area, including Lower Elkhorn, Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and us. And this model created by DNR, we feel really has some inadequacies because it doesn't incorporate the latest geologic data, and because that it's also got some probably errant calculations in terms of how much area is connected to our local streams, even up to the smaller streams. So what we're hoping this AEM data will do is help improve that. So Lower Elkhorn has already went ahead on their own with the Water Sustainability Funding. They basically got their model created and done. They're going through the process with DNR now of updating that or of checking that, the hydrologically connected areas with that. And of course there's a lot more you can do with the groundwater model, but that's kind of our first step, is taking this and using it to accurately define those areas, because that's really where DNR is counting. When we talk about integrated water management, they're saying those are the areas where the water is connected from the groundwater to the stream, and that's what we need to be working on. So as Lower Elkhorn has completed that, We now have a roadmap, and we're basically working now with the other two NRDs then, Lower Platte North and Lower Platte South. We would propose to jointly go in on a Water Sustainability Fund grant. This is being supported by DNR as well, so quite a bit of that. We did get a preliminary scope and cost estimate for doing this with a total cost right now of about $660,000. Stay up there real quick, Bill, right on that. The timing is part of meeting the requirements of, if you remember, we just finished at the end of last year, we just finished the five-year increment for the basin-wide, the Platte River basin-wide plan. We extended it another 5 years. Part of that is to complete this model within that time frame and be able to use it to assess how good are we doing at meeting our depletion requirements or staying within our allowable amounts, if you will, with that. So this schedule does that. This keeps us on track to do that based on what DNR is looking at. Along with the funding application, at some point in time, if we get the money, we need to come back and have an interlocal agreement between the Lower Platte NRDs and also DNR. Because we are the grant kind of applicant, we would work as the administrator, bringing in the funds from the grant, bringing in the funds from the other NRDs, and likely paying a consultant to do the modeling work here. So then scroll down to the money part here. Scroll down to the next, the money part of the graph here. Okay, so what we've outlined then is to, from that $660,000, DNR said they would, you know, however much all the NRDs are putting in together, they would equal that. So we kind of work this back and forth a little bit where, but DNR's money then comes off the top. So if we're going to do the 60-40 split between, we actually do the 60-40 split between what's left. So I'll laser again here. If we take off top, this is what's left, and then we split that 60-40. But we got it set up so that we're basically the same cost amount as DNR. And we end up going in for a Water Sustainability Fund that's slightly over the $250,000 amount, but we think would still be a very competitive grant because we're all kind of working together and saying this is how we want to go about it. And there's, you know, not a lot of we used a lot of information from the Lower Elkhorn NRD systems or process, too, to say, this is a pretty accurate description of what funding will be needed to do this. So, the only other thing to note, we did go to Lower Platte North Water Committee, or I was at Lower Platte North Water Committee meeting last week, and they did approve their portion, which would spread it out over 4 years at about $15,000 each. So they want to kind of get it out over 4 fiscal years, which I think would be workable within the time frames that we're talking about. So they're on board. Lower Platte South, I think, will look at it here towards another week or two. And then DNR is likely or is going to provide us a letter of support for their funding as well. So that's the proposal right now, is to go ahead and approve us submitting a Water Sustainability Fund application, in this case for the $282,900.
Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
We can have a motion on this item. I think we have a recommendation from staff. For those who are on the committee.
I will move with staff recommendation.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
Director Jett. Paul, exactly how much does this cost the Papio Missouri River NRD?
So this would cost us the over the 3 to 3.5 years, the $62,886.
Not per year, but total of $62,000?
Total of that, yeah.
Ted, you have other questions?
No, that's all.
Any other questions? None. Roll call.
Barnett?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Kaminsky?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. Item number 8, review and recommendation of construction bids for the WP4. Lori Lassner.
Good afternoon. On June 30th, we opened bids for the WP4 construction project, which is a reservoir in the Papillion Creek watershed. Thank you. So we received two bids for that. The engineer's estimate for the project was $7,461,000. We were expecting high bids, but not as high as we got. We had a base bid, which we had specified quartzite riprap out of South Dakota. It's a much superior product to what we can find locally, and there are sometimes issues with getting enough of that material locally as well. But we did have them include an alternate bid for the locally available limestone. So we had two bids, Graham Construction and Valley Corp. Valley Corp was the apparent low bidder. Bill, can you scroll down just a bit? The bid tab was attached, but there's the summary there. In both cases, they would have been the apparent low bidder. Both bidders met all requirements. When we started looking at the line items, though, we noticed a few things that seemed to be rather high, mainly things like the earthwork and the dewatering, which is not necessarily something that we know we need. It was an alternate item, a just-in-case kind of item, and that came in at about $1 million of the total bid. And we had expected that to be closer to about $250,000. So looking at it, talking with HDR, and talking with both bidders, we are recommending that we reject all bids, revise some of the bid documents, clarify some language, and address fuel costs. As you know, that's a lot of what we're seeing was in the earthwork, which is just basically equipment moving. So we know that that was a big driver. And because of the length of the project, we're looking at 500 calendar days for the construction schedule. We feel like they were trying to kind of cover what may come over the next few months, whether it gets better or worse. So we feel like we can address some of these issues by modifying the contract to include things like fuel escalation and de-escalation factors, as well as break out some items in unit prices a little bit more. And both bidders did agree that they felt some of these things could have helped their bid as well. So we are recommending that you reject both bids, and we will rebid this later this fall. Troy Meyer and John Engel with HDR are here if you have any specific questions.
Did they want to say anything?
No.
Nope. But we can have a motion on staff.
I would move with staff recommendation to reject the bids.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Thompson?
The quartzite versus the limestone. Have we built structures here using one or the other or both?
Yes.
In our lifetime, it's not going to matter, right?
Well, the limestone is a softer material, and it doesn't always meet specifications as well out of some of the quarries around here. So, but I know that Martin has used the quartzite riprap in other projects, and I think we've used it maybe up in Dakota County a little bit more, where you know they don't have the hauling cost. So we have experience with both. Our preference would certainly be the quartzite if we can get it at a reasonable cost, which is why we included both in the bid documents.
And I'm going to guess the volume of what's needed for this project made the transportation costs extremely high.
The difference between the quartzite and the limestone was about $180,000. So, you know, yeah, it's... It wasn't astronomical, but it was certainly significant.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from directors? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Zelinski?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Chairperson. Aye. Item number 9, review and recommendation of water sustainability fund application, WP4 and WP2. Lori?
So in light of the bids that we just received and knowing that we have a lot of projects in the queue that we need to fund, we are actively trying to apply for grant funding where we can. The Water Sustainability Fund applications are due at the end of July. We did apply for WP4 last year. We received a great score, but there were projects that received even better scores, so we didn't quite meet the cutoff. We were just a couple projects too low with the amount of funding that they had available. So after we talked with Kent Zimmerman at Game and Parks about our application, he did give us a few things we could have tweaked to maybe get a few more points. And now we have final design for both WP4 and WP2. So we thought it would be maybe a good idea to put in a joint application for the two projects. One thing that Kent did tell us is that the commission understands that the Papio reservoirs work as a system, so showing that we have we are making progress in an overall plan and not just random projects here and there that aren't going to work together. They do like to see that. And so since we had the application from last year that was put together by HCR, FIRA is the engineer on WP2, so they started to put an application together this year for WP2, and they took the WP4 application from last year. They are working to finalize that, and we will be submitting that in July, at the end of the month. We anticipate project costs, or the grant would cover about $11.3 million out of the remaining funds, or the remaining construction items for both reservoirs. And with that, I can answer questions.
Thanks, Lori.
Lori, when would we find out if we get the grant?
I believe November is usually when the scores are released and the projects are awarded.
Okay. We can have a staff recommendation on this item.
December at the latest, but
I'd make a motion to move a staff recommendation.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Any other directors have questions regarding it? Director Jack?
Lori, how dependent are we on the Water Sustainability Fund money to do these projects?
We do have construction funding in the budget for both of these projects this year. Yeah.
Without,
we don't have this.
But if we're rejected again and again and again for this, we still would continue on as if weren't rejected.
Correct.
So if we got money, then what does that do to our budget then? Just freeze up money for something else or what?
Yes.
Thank you.
I don't know, Ted, this falls on with you, but when I was on the commission, and Larry can attest to this, projects that don't get approved, it's common to reintroduce those in the next project cycle. So this is no different. It's the only thing we added W2, mm-hmm. WP2, right?
Yeah.
So the cost of preparing the application is not as great as it could have been, because
you're
just changing the dates basically on WP4. And so it'll go in, and maybe this next cycle, there won't be enough other projects to bump these down, right? That's kind of what you feel, Larry. Without knowing what projects come forward, we just throw the dice and see if they approve it.
Just the big canal.
Any other questions from directors? Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Zelinski?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Hi. Item number 10, review and recommendation of Amendment 3 to agreement with Shimmer for public River Bridge Trail Project. Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Platte River Bridge Trail, generally between Bellevue and Plattsmith, along the existing highway bridge structure, Highway 3475. The project has been in design for quite a while. It's a collaboration between both NRDs, both cities, both counties, NDOT, and MAPA. In the design review, a drainage basin that's existing along the side of the highway was determined to be needed to be moved to the other side of the trail. It's a very small change, but redesign of the drainage basin was not in the original scope for Schemmer, so there's a change order for the design work from Schemmer to redesign the basin and move to the other side of the trail. It won't have any impact on the trail or the structure. HDR reviewed, it won't have any impact on the environmental, but that does trigger the need for an amendment to the design contract with Schemmer, so this is a bit of logistics or housekeeping on the way in which we have our contract outlined with Schemmer. Total design cost change is $3,989.09, Schemmer will complete the work. We will finish the plans, submit them for NDOT review, line it up for bidding and construction next year. So things are moving along very well. Very happy to have this federal aid project moving so smoothly. We will receive the final documentation from NDOT, and this resolution authorizes John to execute that document when it arrives. So this process helps us expedite our work. So again, kind of a small item, but required to change the existing contract with Schemmer through NDOT's process. So there's a map that shows the location again on the Platte River. If anybody has any questions, I would be glad to answer them.
Have a motion.
Yes, I.
Staff recommendation.
We have a second.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Right. And that concludes TPO. Thanks.
I'm next. Just trying to find my place. Well, nonetheless.
Green
FEL. I'm trying to find the FEL.
It's green also.
All right. Meeting called to order. And before we move on, alternate member, I'd like to appoint Fred Conley in lieu of Danny Begley. Notification of the Open Meetings Act posting and announcement meeting procedure. And just briefly, copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back of the wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we will ask the public not to interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. And with that, quorum call.
Conley?
Davidson? Yes.
McCormick?
Here.
Yes.
And Sherkleson?
Yes. Adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Vote on the adoption of the agenda.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes. We have a proof of publication of this meeting notice. Item number six, review of the fiscal year 2023 Budget Draft 1, General Manager John Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attached is the working draft of the district's fiscal year 2023 budget. As you are aware, a budget document is a guide or working plan for each fiscal year. I have a quick overview of the draft budget. Total requirements for this year would be $105.8 million. Last year's requirements was $109.8 million. Property tax levy proposing to be the same as last year. Total property tax requirement this year, $30,185,961, which is a 5.8% increase from last year. Property valued at $100,000 would pay $35.67 per year, same as last year in fiscal year 2022. Again, this is based off a 5.8% increase. The final valuations will not be submitted by the counties until late August. Since this is the first draft, the several unknowns, obviously, are final revenue expenditures, cash on hand, treasurer's balance, the valuations, and then our compliance also with any state statutes. Please review the budget carefully. Some dates to remember for the budget process: August 9th is a subcommittee review the second draft, and then public input meeting will be August 11th. At the board meeting, and then budget hearings, adoption of the fiscal year 2023 budget, and set the tax levy for fiscal year 2023 is at the September 8th board meeting. So those who are here went through the budget workshop a little bit. I put some information in front of your packet, or in front of your folders, regarding some of the budget highlights, and then also just some of the information as far as the inflation environment that we're dealing with, as well as everyone else. Regarding materials, again, we're proposing the same mill levy, an overall spending increase of 5.8, and then just the CPI increase year over year from last year is about anywhere from 8.5 to 8.8. Construction costs, building costs, material costs are all up. Material costs are up 36.8% on average, diesel fuel 237%, plastic products 45%, steel products 113%. In comparison, I don't have any other budget numbers from any other entities, but the state of Nebraska, and they adopted their spending plan for this fiscal year, was 5.9% increase. And just as a reminder, too, the district received no COVID funds from either local, state, or federal entities, so we don't have that additional cushion like other entities to absorb some of the increased cost in our projects and programs. I did give some example budget categories. Salaries for administration, maintenance, tech are all down. Employee retirement contributions are down. Employee insurance is down despite the 15% increase. Attorney's fees are down, and fees and taxes are down. Increases that we're going to see are maintenance channels and levies are all up, $3.3 million. Maintenance of dams is up, $251,000. Fuel and oil, $70,000. And equipment, autos and trucks, $114,124. Above last year's budget. We're pretty consistent year after year what we do, our projects programs. I'll reiterate that we cut about $6 million from an initial draft of the budget that was produced after we all met with project managers and accounting and everything. And we did that because we only take what we need. We thought 5.8% in this environment was actually pretty good. Keep the mill levy the same. It was our goal. If the valuations come in lower, we'll have to adjust the levy. Or if they come in higher, we'll adjust the levy down. But we're pretty confident that the 5.8 will cover what we want to do. We also did some strategic planning as far as the cost share programs, like the Urban Drainage Way, Trails Assistance Program. It appears that the applicants, the projects are getting bigger. They're very worthy projects, but there's permitting issues, there's other funding issues, just timing of construction. So Eric and accounting and Amanda and I did a review of those, and we were able to kind of spread those out. We had a lot of them that were carrying over year after year after year, and they weren't getting built. So we're informing the sponsors that we're going to take them out of the budget this year and plan for putting them in future years. There will be some interlocal agreements in August that will codify that for them so they can count on our funding to do the project, but it helps with our budgeting that we take those out. And so that was a change from what we've done in the past, and we think it's a good move because it doesn't burden us with budgeting something that's not going to get completed and taking away from something we could be doing. It may, in the future, we may have to limit or not even take applications for a certain program for that year until we get those bigger projects done, but that's fine. You have that authority and the ability to do so. So there's some other things that obviously we're doing. We're delaying. You just voted to recommend to delay or to reject bids. And so we're just trying to be smart and spend the best way we can. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions on any project or program. If you have one now or if you have one later, let me know. Hats off to staff each and every year. Do a great job trying to keep costs down, coming up with great ideas of how to stretch the dollar as much as possible. My hat's off to them. It's a great group, top to bottom, and they all do very good work to get, to do it, for being very professional and spending wisely, and spending it like it's their own money, not just willy-nilly. So I'm quite anxious to see what other entities are going to come up with as far as increases in their budgets this year. I think that at the end of the day, ours will be, if not the lowest, one of the lowest. But we'll wait and see. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have or any comments or suggestions. Ted?
I just had a quick question regarding staff salaries. You're showing a lot of salaries going down, but mm-hmm. how do you do that when you've got an 8.5% inflationary environment? Do the right. staff salaries not increase? Or
no, so we had our normal. We had you approved the 1.6 increase in the cost of living, and then we had our normal increases for performance. But so we've had a number of staff turnover. We had a number of retirements. We had an unfortunate incident where we lost one of our higher paid employees. And so we've had some vacancies sit for a while until we filled those. And so things like that kind of all contribute to not paying out all those salaries that you're anticipating. I'm speaking financially now, not from a personal standpoint.
Right.
I'm missing those people. But as far as the numbers, it works out that we're hiring people at not the salary level that the people that parted were at. And so that all contributes to lowering those costs.
So is there any knowledge at this point of what a salary increase would be for your typical employee?
I think the average is anywhere from 3 to 3.5, and then you add the 1.6 that you've approved back in January. So it's in that range.
How do we arrive at 3 or 3.5?
So we have owners. So no, our appraisal system is based on performance, and so you either get a does not meet expectation, meets expectation, exceeds, far exceeds, and so their supervisor rates their performance for the year, and then they fit into that pay matrix of what percentage they get based on that performance. So we used to be that we looked at all the state data and everything we came up, we brought to the board saying we'd like to give everyone a 2% raise. Well, it didn't matter if you were the top level performer or if you were not, everybody got the same. So we changed a number of years ago to a performance base. That way we could reward employees for exceptional performance or going above and beyond. And so that's how we got to the performance-based system. So the averages, I mean, there's some that are lower, there's some that are higher, but that's about where we're at.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
More questions, directors. I have a point of clarification. Public comment is on August 9th.
I'll go through that again, Larry.
Point of clarification, I'd allow someone from the public tonight
if they wish to speak. That's
okay.
Fine. August 9th is the FEL subcommittee meeting and the review of the second draft, and then the public input meeting is August 11th,
August
and that's
11th.
At the board meeting.
Okay.
Okay. And then the hearings, obviously, are in September.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. General Manager.
Any other questions? Anybody have questions? Okay.
Okay. Right. Thank you. But yet, go ahead, state your name and address. And
call for a vote in a second.
Good evening. Sean Malott, 10404 North 132nd Street, Omaha, Nebraska. I just have some general questions regarding the budget that I would appreciate some responses to, and I've provided my email in order to get those. Specifically, on page 9 of the budget, it discusses some grant funding for the floodway purchase program. I guess my question would be, is that the total grant funding that is coming through, or are there additional funds expected in future years?
And Sean, did you submit these so we can answer them?
I will.
Okay, that is
easy. I will.
I'll forward them to everybody so they have
them. On page 14, under the maintenance and channels on the fiscal year 22 budget. There was over $200,000 budgeted for federal grants and funds, and it, according to the actual, none of that was collected, and I was curious why that wouldn't be included in the fiscal year 23 budget, why there wasn't a carryover. Similar, if you turn the page on the Elk Pigeon Creek, there was $1.5 million in the budget for federal grant funding, but only $837 was received, so I would expect to see $700 carrying over into the fiscal year 23 budget. On page 30, I was just curious mostly about the nutrient site. Is the total cost of the project the $2.5 million for the land acquisition, or would you had mentioned that the NRD withdrew their $1 million that they were going to make a contribution? So my question in general would be, what is the total cost of that land? Is the 2.5 the final cost if it happens, or is it 3.5, or is there additional amounts? And then I would also like to know the address of the site, and if it's known, who owns that site. On page 34, in reference to the dam site 7, I would like to be provided some information about the 4.5 that was budgeted. For example, how many acres were acquired, how many homes, how many are expected to be acquired in the future years. And, of course, willing buyers and willing sellers, I anticipate that. And then kind of to expand on that, has the date to begin the construction of dam site 7 changed because of the acquisition of this land on the Papio partnership? Have they changed that timeline? Same questions on dam site 12 on page 35. And then lastly, on the last page of the document, I'm assuming that's page 46, but I was curious as to the need for the $2.7 million that the Southern Sarpy County Partnership is holding. I know that the NRD isn't in control of that, but they are a member and they do attend meetings. So I'd appreciate to know if there's a discussion on why they're reserving $2.7 million. Thank you for allowing me these questions to be answered. And if you need any clarification on anything I've put on my request, I'd just feel free to call, email. Thank you.
All right. I guess that's it with item number 6. Item number 7, review and recommendation of fiscal year 2023 budget lid computation, 1% resolution. General Manager John Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So each and every year, state statute requires that no government shall adopt a budget containing a total of budget restricted funds more than the prior year's budget funds allowable increases. The restricted fund base is restricted by 2.5% increase. However, by a supermajority vote of the board, you can increase that by 1% to allow additional flexibility and to obviously address inflationary pressures like we're doing right now. So this is a perfect example of how we not only increase in cost, but also, for example, we went above the 1.6% for the COLA increase for staff salaries. So what this does is there's a list of what the 2.5% lid applies to as far as the general expenditures. And so we recommend this each and every year that you do adopt the additional 1%. It doesn't mean there'll be a tax increase. It just simply means that the district has the flexibility to respond to inflationary pressures and things that we're experiencing right now. The one thing that it could do, for example, if we got into a lid situation where we couldn't exceed the 2.5%, if you notice, for example, equipment and vehicles are part of that lid. So maybe we would be forced not be able to buy vehicles. Maybe we'd have to lease vehicles or rent them or something like that. So, again, that would increase costs because we couldn't afford to purchase them or not couldn't afford it. We would violate the 2.5% lid. So we meet that every year, but it's good to have that flexibility to have that additional 1%, and it builds on itself. So if you approve it every year, it tends to give you that base that you can make those adjustments to. We did include kind of the history of the 1% increase. Last year was approved, in 20 was approved, and then in 13 it was approved, and then other years it was not. So as the environment we face today, we strongly recommend that you approve the 1% this year. And again, it just gives us the flexibility to respond budgetarily to what's going on in environment outside of our control. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you. Need a motion?
So moved.
I move staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion. Anyone from the public wish to speak on this item? Staff? Go ahead. No, directors.
So, did I hear you right that it's cumulative? So
yeah. So if you do
20,
it,
20, you have 2.5 left over, and
well,
you have 2.5 left over. This will put you to.
I think Carrie can explain it better than I can, but it's.
It here comes Carrie. Carrie's coming.
The base. I think where's Carrie?
Here she comes.
She's my expert on this. So I'll over to her.
I'm sorry. What was question?
Does it 2.5% accumulate?
Yes, it's like compound interest. We started with a certain amount when they implemented
it. So 2.5, even if you didn't use it in 20,
it would be there.
We have 5% now that we could use in 22.
It would be there for you in the future when you did need it, if inflation continues or something else unforeseen. Yes, if you approve it every year, then you have a larger base to start with the next year for your 2.5%, like compound interest. So it would be available to us in the future if we did need it, if inflation continues or if we have another.
It's not as simple as if you approve it this year, you actually have 7.5% of flexibility because your basis is growing. You know, for 3 years, you've compounded interest at 2.5 from the 2020.
We have 2.5% more to start with than we did last year, which was 3.5% more than we had the year before that because you voted for the extra 1%, so it will compound over time.
And if it was approved again, it would be roughly 4.5%?
No, it would be 3.5% of last year's restricted funds.
Last year's has that additional in it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's 3.5 every year, or 2.5 every year, or 3.5 every year, depending how you vote. It doesn't we don't have if you add it all up, you don't add it all up, it just goes from year to year.
It goes away every year.
And then you go from that base to the next year.
I didn't want to put words in your mouth, is that correct?
Okay. That's all I had.
Yeah.
All right. And,
so it's not like a running clock. It just goes from here.
Any other questions from the directors?
It continues to grow.
The base does, not the interest rate. Right. Okay.
Any other questions? Go ahead, Chairman.
I'd like to add, as John mentioned, this does not increase our mill levy. It means if we need to go to this reserve, we reduce any other expenditures to keep within the budget.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Roll call.
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. All right. Agenda item number 8, review and recommendation of fourth addendum to interlocal agreement with City of Blair for Washington County Rural Water Number 2, Justin Novak.
Good evening, directors. Just bringing in front of you tonight the fourth addendum to our interlocal agreement that was originally signed in 2003. With the City of Blair and what used to be Washington County, but that was the third addendum. We removed them from that due to that issue we had some years prior to me taking this position. But so coming through our actual insurance review, it came up about the water tower and the insurance coverage. And so I was talking to Al Shoemaker from the City of Blair, and he said, well, we're also covering the water tower as well, too. And so I'm like, well, I know you guys do the maintenance on this thing, and basically they do everything with the water tower. They actually just approved a project for the repainting of the outside and the inside of the water tower for a little over $400,000, and they're not asking $1 from us. So it's a very good partnership that we have with the City of Blair. I think it's very advantageous for us. But after looking through the interlocals, it originally stated that they would take over that part of the system once the revenue bonds were paid off, which obviously will be quite some time. Hopefully in my lifetime they'll be about paid off, but it's going to be quite a few years yet. So we figured that being that they're doing the maintenance, they're maintaining the tower, paying for everything, really take care of all of it, that it would only make sense that they actually own the tower. They would assume the property that the tower's on, the easements for the roads going in, and then actually take ownership of the tower. But we would still have all the rights as a rural water system to still receive that water. It just basically gives them the proper ownership that they probably should have as they're insuring it and maintaining it right now. So it's just more of a housekeeping item, I would say, from things how they've been operating for the last 6 years. The City of Blair is on board with that. They're actually taking it to their city council tonight as well. So this is something actually I'd like to get done before they do the water tower painting, just so everything's kind of on the up and up. Any questions?
Thank you.
I move for staff recommendation.
Do I get a second? Okay. Anybody from the public wish to speak on this item? Staff? Directors.
So the actual pipes that run from the tower to the various locations, we still maintain all those.
Correct.
They don't have anything to do with that.
Yeah, so basically they're going to maintain the water main that goes into the tower, the meter pit, and then going into the tower itself. And once the water comes out of the tower, it passes through that valve, then that is what we operate and maintain.
Does Blair get most of their water from that tower?
It feeds basically the southwest part of Blair, all of Kennard, and all of System 2. Okay. So Blair actually has a vested interest in this as well, obviously, mm-hmm. with what they receive. But System 2 and System 1 are interconnected, so we can actually pump water from the south to the north. And so, like, during this time when the tower is going to be down for 2 months, there will be no water in that tower. We're actually going to be serving ourselves from System 1. So it's really cool how this was all set up years ago and a lot of forethought in what they did. And so it's a unique partnership that works out very well.
Yeah. How come they're so anxious to take the tower over?
It's really not anxious. It was actually kind of discussing. We were insuring the tower. They were insuring the tower. Right, they're doing all the operations and maintenance. They're paying for the $400,000 in painting the tower. We feel that, talking with management and Brent, that it makes sense for them to have ownership since they're kind of the ones doing everything. We don't do a thing, really. So it just really kind of puts it where it needs to be, really.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chairman
Thompson.
Director Thompson. Director Thompson.
You get rid of one more water tower. How many do we have left? I always buy these.
It's still our water. We're still a user of that water tower, and actually our name will be on this water tower here.
Well, once it gets around the district, whole district.
We have standpipes and water towers. So DeKalb County has a standpipe and a water tower. Thurston County has a standpipe and a water tower. And then we have a water tower in Washington County. But we're still a partner in that. We just kind of get off easy, I'll be honest with you.
NRP or just the dirt?
More questions? Vote. Roll call.
Conley. Davidson.
Yes.
McCormick.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes. And item number 9, review and recommendation of amendment and quit claim deed with the Village of Waterloo for transfer of Waterloo River Access Amendment Grant.
Good afternoon. Maybe we can go to the map, Bill. This is the actual opposite of Justin's project that he just presented. This is something that we have been maintaining for a number of years, and there was an agreement to transfer ownership to the Papio NRD, and so now we're following up on that. So this is the West Maple or the Waterloo River Access Point, and we had an agreement with Waterloo in, I think, 2004 to build this, and then they were going to take it over. Well, after the 2010 flood, there's no way. They have, like, one maintenance person for the village, and it's a little further away from the village, and they couldn't do the repairs. So we agreed in 2010, I think, to take the ownership, and then we were able to get FEMA funds and clean it up. And we've cleaned it up a number of times. We maintain it and everything, and it just, the paperwork has I don't know, lagged behind on their end, really. So they did finally execute that deed and transfer it over to us. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer it. But we really have been taking all of the maintenance on for a very long time.
Thank you. Can I get a
motion? I move the staff recommendation.
Right. Second. Davidson. All right. Any comments from the public? Staff? Directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes.
All right. Item 10. I have here review and recommendation of No Name Dyke High Ground Easement Purchase. Colette and Jeffrey Bowen, lot number 46, and north half of lot number 47, executive session. Do you recommend we go into that?
Yes.
Okay, we have to go into executive session. Motion to go into executive session.
Motion to go into executive session.
All right. Made second. By Cormick, a second by Conley. Roll call.
Cormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Left, but
Bradley?
Yes. Vote to move on out of executive session. Roll call.
Hey, Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. And we are at item 12. We are adjourned. Nope.
We have to vote.
Vote on these.
Yeah, don't vote on 10 and 11.
Drop the hand. Thank you. Stand. All right, let's vote on. Vote on the motion. Can I have a motion?
I would move on staff recommendation.
Second.
All right. Roll call.
Aye.
Public comment. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes. All right. Then for item number 11.
I move for staff recommendation as well.
Second.
All right. Any public comment? Staff? Directors? Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Now, that. We are adjourned.